All right. What's up? What's up? What's up? Welcome. I am your host, Chris Cox, and this is the Wild Ones podcast, where we work in love daily. And our goal is to recognize those who have learned how to turn their passion into a profession. And I have two wonderful guests here today. I have Gina Trinisi to my right, and I have Zadika Poindexter to my left, and they are from the Nebraska Writers Collective out of Omaha, sharing their passion and love for spoken word, their love for poetry, their love for education, their love for creativity with the youth in Omaha. So everybody, welcome to the Wild Ones podcast, Gina and Zadika.
Thanks, Chris.
Oh, you're very welcome. I really am excited. Like, it's not just podcast talk. Like, I'm very excited to have you guys in the studio, and I'm very excited to be able to speak to you, especially Gina, to meet you in person. Okay. We've been emailing for so long.
Yes.
And so it's good to actually put like on Zoom during COVID.
Yeah.
So we can put a face to everything, and I get to meet you for the first time, Zadika. So I'm very excited. I'm very happy. And for coming into our space and sharing this space with me. And the first question is usually kind of the hard question. And I have two of you, so you both can take turns or answer or jump in. Is bring us up to speed in terms of what has led you to this moment that you're on this show here? Led you, what path have you taken that has brought you here at this moment?
So almost exactly a year ago was our first day as co-executive directors of the Nebraska Writers Collective. When our previous executive director decided to retire, they had to think about what the next phase of leadership was. And that was an investment in co-leadership. Both of us have been involved in the organization for over 13 years. And we sat down and we had coffee. And I immediately knew that we could do this. There's so many different ways that we relate as humans and how we live in different brain spheres that I knew could function very well together. So we signed the contracts and pretty much started working immediately. It's like, so I'm just going to see you every day now. That's what, mm-hmm. cool. Okay. And we took off running, and we were lucky enough to have each other and to have an amazing base of programs to work with. And we got to spend this next year talking about what our mission was, what our vision was, what the future was. Mm-hmm. And it brought us back to being here to talk to you a little bit. It's been a great year. And this is a great way to kind of talk about and wrap up what our first year has been.
Mm-hmm. It's the weirdest anniversary I think I've ever celebrated. Uh-huh. It's like officially a one-year workiversary. Mm-hmm. Before this, I was the program director of the Nebraska Writers Collective for 3 years, some of which was in a global pandemic. Very strange. I met a lot of folks on Zoom, made a lot of cold calls, felt very, very lonely. And a big part, I think, of this being the best iteration of the Nebraska Writers Collective and the best version of this job that I've ever had has been that move to co-leadership. We talk a lot about leaders being lonely at the top. I say that having a co-leader means that you have to look somebody in the eyes before you make a dumb decision. You are immediately held accountable. You immediately have someone to bounce ideas off of. Our dynamic has been hilarious to me, which is you say, here's my big dream. And I say, can we make that maybe like a size medium? You've pitched me a large. For budget reasons and for time constraints and for the reality of like the plane of existence we live in, I need that to be a medium. But it's been such a cool challenge to work together. Sometimes I pitch you a dream that's way too small and you say, absolutely not. We have to stretch this thing out. It needs to be bigger. And I think being dared to be better than you are is so worth it. Every day to come to work and to have that person who is both a challenge and a joy. It has taught me so much about communication, collaboration, creativity, all of those things that we say that we are about as an organization in the nonprofit world, especially. I think we're all about trying to work together, getting out of a scarcity mindset and trying to make sure that we're collaborating and partnering as opposed to feeling like there's not enough money for all of us to exist. We say that we're about those things. And maybe we're not so much that. I feel like we are actually living those values of community, connection, and collaboration.
That's awesome. It's funny because that's how kind of my wife and I are. It's just like, let's do fists. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ah. And I feel like I'm the bad guy because I'm like, mm-hmm. like we're just trying to do the stuff we already said we're gonna do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, but that's the beauty of it, because you don't, you know, we're, you know, I'm like, I don't know how we're gonna do it. She's like, let's just do it. And it's like, okay. And then you figure out you can do it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, we could do it. Mm-hmm. We could do this. This works. I don't know why I was stressing. I mean, it's a lot of work, but okay, we can do it. Mm-hmm. So you need that big dreamer. You need that person that just says, okay, I don't know how. I don't know when. I don't know who's paying for it. But we doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like who's paying for this? I don't know. Well, how are we going to fit this? I don't know.
TBD.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, where's this going to happen? When is it going to happen? I don't know. But we're going to do it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the plan. I'll write the plan up and we'll figure out who's going to pay for it after the plan comes. And then you write it up and you go through it and you're like, oh, okay, this works. Mm-hmm. All right. We got it. We're there. We're doing what we're supposed to do. So it's funny in that way that you need that person to, whether it's your wife, and you run a nonprofit together, or whoever it is, you need someone to be able to say, let's do everything under the sun. You need that one person to say, let's scale it back. And then you usually meet in the middle sometime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very awesome. I appreciate that. I feel like I can relate to that. At least on the bag's eyes, I'm like, not really.
It makes sense astrologically. We talk about this all the time. Zadika's a Gemini. I'm a Capricorn. It explains everything.
Yes.
I think the interview is over. I think the podcast is done.
No, my wife is a Gemini and I'm an Aquarius.
Look at you.
So that's how it works.
I love that.
That's how that works.
Yes.
So if anybody is like, astrology is that pseudo? No, it's real.
It's real.
It's real. You, those little blurbs in the paper that tell you what you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty accurate sum up. So you've been co-executive directing and you both have enjoyed it. You have a good working relationship, which is amazing because not everybody does.
Mm-mm.
Not everybody can sit there and share the limelight or share the accountability. Some people just like to pass it off to everyone. I think people forget that when you're in charge. Oh, it's great to be in charge. Well, yeah, some people are not very good at it. Some people like to blame everybody else and say, well, I'm the head and I tell you what to do, you have to make it work. So it's not really my fault, regardless of how they implemented it, regardless of what the working culture is or the living culture is. But you guys are having a good working relationship, and that shows in the programs or the programming that you are currently running. So and how I kind of got introduced. So can we talk about the Youth Poet Laureate contest? Can
mm-hmm.
we guys do that? Please. Shamelessly plug and talk about this, the awesomeness of that program for youth.
It's already, to be fair, because this will not come up when she begins to give the spiel. Mm. This is in Nebraska because it was Gina's push. It was her dream. It was her bringing it to the state. And she's got national recognition for the way she implemented it here.
Mm.
So I'm going to leave it over to you to have that conversation.
Thank you. We run the only Youth Poet Laureate program in the state. We are rare in that we are a statewide initiative, which is something that we learned together this year. I will say that this is a national initiative. So it's a program of Urban Word NYC, and they produced the inaugural poet, Amanda Gorman. That is the most familiar household name that we can think of. The network feeds up from county and city levels and state levels up into regional and national programs. So it is possible that the Nebraska Youth Poet Laureate could go on into those regional competitions and come out as the next inaugural poet, the next Youth Poet Laureate of the United States. So I think that that interconnectedness is a really important piece to highlight. The program is about creative work and it's about civic engagement, which I love. So we're not talking about students who are strictly good poets. They better be good people. They better be good leaders. They better have good and big and interesting and intricate ideas. We award them prize money. They apply. We award them prize money if they are chosen by one of our seven judges. Chris was one of our seven judges in the first ever Youth Poet Laureate competition in Nebraska. And the judges are split. We have them representing regions out of Nebraska. We have them representing civic and community work and then creative work as well. So we're really trying to diversify that judge pool and make sure that we're acknowledging folks who are coming from all sorts of different lived experiences, all sorts of different perspectives, even genres of writing. Some folks are fiction writers, but can still be good judges of poetry. Once those judges choose the winner, they're awarded prize money. They're awarded a $2,000 budget for a civic engagement project of their design. This year, we had Omaha Steaks as a presenting sponsor for us. We had Dundee Bank sponsoring for us. And we had Civic Nebraska enter a partnership with us. So they are providing that civic mentor, and we will provide the creative mentor. So the ways that the program has absolutely exploded has been so much fun to watch. And we just crowned our 2023-24 Nebraska Youth Poet Laureate. Her name is Aaliyah American Horse. She is a senior at Gordon Rushville High School, brilliant poet. She's really interested in her application. She talked about creating a civic engagement project that works to amplify the stories of missing Indigenous women. So we are thrilled to have her as our third in our cohort. First was Mimi Yu, then Tanya Bachu, and now Aaliyah.
That is amazing work. And I just want to shout out, if anyone doesn't know Amanda Gorman, she did the presidential inauguration and she spoke, and her voice was so powerful. And that 7 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever that was such an emotional and mental turning point, I think, for a lot of young Black girls and just young girls of color. To say, holy snap, like, I can do this. Like, mm-hmm. It was a whole different way to see something and to see somebody. And they always talk about representation. But that snapshot, which is American history, mm-hmm. I think has changed the course and trajectory of a lot of young girls. And I think it has changed what people feel on the mainstream about poetry, about spoken word, about creativity in the space of writing, in the space of speaking, and how powerful your voice can be. And so I just wanted, because I know you name dropped it, and I wanted to make sure and throw the emphasis on how much weight that mm-hmm. her name should carry for you, especially if you're the mother of a little Black girl, if you're the mother mm-hmm. of a girl who's of color, if you're the mother of a girl, if you're the mother of anybody, if you're anyone's parent. Mm-hmm. That name should carry just as much weight as an athlete, just as much weight as a singer, just as much weight as a teacher. That name for that young lady should carry a lot of weight for you if you're a parent and you want to show your child a good role model. And so being instrumental in that and bringing that program and being nationally recognized in that program is one of the big reasons why I wanted you both on the show, is because more people need to understand that. More people need to understand. We always want to say, well, we want to bring people to the table. We mm-hmm. want to be more inclusive. We want to, make sure we are changing the way our society views and not having these boundaries or divisions. Well, the first thing is training someone's voice. Mm-hmm. As people of color, as, you know, as being a different gender, as being women, from your standpoint, I'm not speaking for you, but from your standpoint, women have been taught you don't have a voice, or they've been constantly fighting to have their voice heard. And as a man of color, as a person of color, you can't say nothing. And don't, for darn sure, don't speak too loud, because we're going to call the police on you, because that means you're angry and going to do something. So being able to train voices and that, and tap into that inner part of them where they feel comfortable speaking their true part of themselves is so powerful, and it's so uplifting, and it's so such an emotional movement towards, yes, I can say this. And it seems like innocuous. I can say this poem in front of someone, but then it becomes, I can stand up in front of somebody and say, this is wrong. I can go to a school board and say, we need to change this. I can go to a legislator and protest and say, this needs to change, or we need to do better. And then we have more of our young people doing that, which then has more of a generation that's ready for change. Mm-hmm. So kudos to you both doing that and changing the way people see themselves.
Thank you.
I hope that was okay.
That was okay. You actually,
oh my gosh.
It's amazing to be seen that way. We were very much kind of in a space where we're head down and trying to figure out what's happening next. And we forget sometimes mm-hmm. to celebrate that. But when we talk to folks about this program, learning how to participate in a poetry slam space is about core skill building. It is. If you can get to the process where you feel like you're getting things out of your head and writing them down. And then from there, you learn about feedback and critique and editing, which is giving other people feedback and learning how to receive it and take what's necessary for you. And then you get to the point where you get comfortable and then perform it on stage. Once you go through that arc, it doesn't matter where else you go. I would love if they keep writing and performing poetry, but if they don't, there's not a boardroom, a classroom, any space that they inhabit where they don't have a core belief that their voice is valid and they know how to use that tool that they've been inherently have. It's magic, the things that just, that in participating in the spoken word space just creates humans that are better empowered to understand and use their voices. And that's what I've loved about it always.
Awesome. And it's great. It's a great thing. And that's part of why Gladys and I got into this. And I'm not always great about giving space. I'm not always great. I'm a talker. And I love to talk and love to share stories and be a storyteller. And that's something that's innate in me.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me, it still takes me a long time to realize not everybody's like that. Mm. And even with the fact that I'll go talk in front of everybody, I'll go say this in front of everybody, sometimes it took me a long time to like say what was really in me and not the shell that I had built around me. And so I still struggle with shutting up. sometimes, you know, being good, or sometimes teaching others, is sometimes you just got to shut up and you got to let them take the space. So I'm still trying to learn to do that. I'm not very good at it all the time. So hopefully I can do that today.
You are doing great. I think quiet because I'm just actively emotional. I mean, that was the best speech. I don't know if you've heard a better speech for the Youth Poet Laureate program, but that was the best version of anybody really seeing that program for what it is, recognizing its worth and its weight. It was something that we started absolutely in the pandemic. So we didn't get to see people's physical reactions. We missed passing over a trophy. We missed high-fiving kids and saying, great work. We loved this about your portfolio, you know? So to have you have that level of response and to know that you participated in that program completely online and that that is something that you continue to carry forward, that holds a lot of weight with me. So thank you for not shutting up, Chris. Thank you for the speech.
Probably the first time ever. No, you're welcome. I'm not going to sit up here and say, oh, you know what? If I was in high school, I would have loved to do that. Because mm-hmm. I was in such a shell. I was in such of how do I survive and navigate where I'm at, right? So I didn't. And I feel like sometimes I'm a broken record on this show. But I say that because it took me a long time to not be in that way. And I wouldn't have done it in high school because I was too much like, I ain't with that, you know, because that's what everybody else was doing. Like, I was not strong enough to be like, no, I really do love writing and I really do love performing. And I would love to go do that. So now as an adult and seeing that and knowing when I did get to participate in a way that I got to hide it from people, that I felt would have picked on me for it. Mm-hmm. I know how that made me feel. So seeing others be involved in it, I have a sense vicariously of, I know how that makes you feel. And I know that's going to make you feel so much better when you get older, because you don't have to be 35 like me and have an epiphany and be like, you know what? I have friends that I've never told I watch anime. Mm-hmm. That's kind of weird. I'm 35 and people don't know that about me. I was 35 and my own cousin, who's like my brother, you know, when he was alive, he didn't know. And he was like my best friend, and, you know, and we both hid it from each other. So to see those kids be that powerful and that strong within themselves and say, I am going to write about this. And when I read those poems, it wasn't surface level, the flowers and daffodils and the sunshine. It was real deal. I am writing about my generational trauma. I am writing about racism. I am writing about death of a friend. I am writing about what I am really experiencing as a teenager in my world. And that is powerful. to say, let alone write it. And then I'm going to have other people read it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to have other people judge it.
Mm-hmm.
So you created a space where, even though if they don't really know, you created a space for them to be immensely powerful people. So thank you for working in your love. It's not the end of the show, people. So, but I just thank you for working in your love daily. Thank you for being those wild ones and helping others be wild with you. So thank you. Thank you very much for being on the show. Thank you. It's not over yet. I just wanted to say kudos and say thank you. The next question is coming up. So, you know, take some time to like breathe that in, because I can get emotional too, big baby, sometimes. My next question is, and this is for either one of you to answer at any other time, is, because we talked about how powerful poetry is, and we talked about how powerful writing is, but why poetry? Why not something else? Why not just base it off of education? Why not base it off of athletics? Why was it specific, and why was it important to go down that route of poetry, if that makes sense? Like, why do you think poetry does what it does to people when they get involved in it? What do you think is that crux of it?
For me, it's poetry is a connector. Its roots in having transporting history and family stories has always been there. And the idea of working in this art form that is a connector means that if I show up in a room of complete strangers, if I'm on stage and I get these 3 minutes to tell the best story I have in me, and in that 3 minutes, the room is quiet and nothing else exists other than the fact that we are connected to each other because of these words, there's a power in that immediate community that I don't think can be repeated in any other way. Mm-mm. It's just immediate and emotional, and there's a feedback of energy that takes place in those rooms that allows people to make these instant connections. Kids that have met each other in our programs have married or become friends for life. Mm-hmm. I have a list of people in my phone right now who, if I call them, they will come and help me. They're poets. I met them in these rooms. There's something that transports you to something outside of anything else that you cling on to. You're in this space. You love these words. You share your stories with each other, and you walk away with something of each other. Hopefully, if you still see each other again, but even if you don't, it's with you, even for years later, if you've never seen that person again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think what you're getting at is this idea of vulnerability and bravery being two sides of the same coin. So to be up in those spaces, I think our MCs do a really good job at the festival of honoring that and celebrating our students and saying it is not easy to be on stage. If you are an audience member, don't for 1 second think that this is a quick decision, right? Our students have prepared all year long. It is so scary to be on that stage. And there is nothing like the rush that follows after. And it does feel brave. I mean, I don't know what a firefighter feels like, but it does feel sort of like that save the day feeling. Made something good happen, feeling connected with somebody and found a new friend. There's nothing like those feelings. So being in a space that also allows you to have all of those feelings, permission to feel, I think in our world is rare, getting rarer. And this art form is all about giving permission to feel. Go on stage and feel sad. Go on stage and tell the story about your grief. Go on stage and tell everybody about your love and your joy. And being given the space to witness that is so special and so unique. I always say that poetry is just the smallest way to tell a story. And I think that I'm not a fiction writer because it's just too much writing. So I really like small, accessible stories. And poetry, when it appears as an abstraction or when it is difficult to understand, for me personally, is not a win, because I want to get people onto the side of poetry. So I want to tell these really small stories that are rich in imagery. They are strong in the senses. You can smell what I'm describing. You can taste it. You can touch it. You can physically experience this little bitty piece of my life in 14 lines or fewer. And you understand me a little bit more than you did at the top of the title, right? Like, that is my goal as a writer, is to make you want to read more poetry, to make you think that it is possible for you also to be a poet.
Yeah. See, I would have loved to have you guys as teachers. Because maybe I might have been like, you know what? I should try that. Yeah. I don't think I should worry about what other people think all the time. And I did. I had some experiences. Like, I did some acting. My sister found it. I actually was in like a little soap opera in New York when I was like 15. And she found it. I had like a little small part, you know. And because I enjoyed it. I wanted to be an actor. But I let the shell take over. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go play football. Not that I love football, but I felt like that was more what people saw me as. And you said something about, that is, you know, that is brave, or it's not a firefighter. And I think we try to limit what bravery is. Mm-hmm. And people think bravery is just running into a fire, just jumping in front of a bullet, just doing this. And those things are exponentially brave, but it's also brave because bravery is just doing something even when you're afraid of it. You know, it's courage, bravery. You're still afraid of it, but you don't let the fear stop you. And it is brave to say, I'm gonna stand up on stage, because there's so many people in the world that are like, I could do that, but never do it. They never do it. And it's not because they don't want to, or it's not because they can't. Some people won't because they are afraid. And I big thing that I want people to hear or understand is that I feel like we should stop prefacing bravery. Like, it's brave, but you know, you're not afraid. No, it's just brave. It's just brave.
Full stop.
You are just courageous. And it doesn't have to mean, you know, they're not a fight. No, firefighter, they're brave for what they do. But you take a kid that never talks about themselves or has these could be horrific things happening, and they decide to put it down and stand up and then tell everybody. Yeah, that's brave. Because we would judge them otherwise if they didn't tell everybody. So I just want to say, bravery is bravery. Whatever it is that you're doing, that you are afraid of doing, but you're doing it anyway, y'all are out there being brave. And if you want an easy way to think about it, poetry is the first form of social media. It's the first form of tweeting. Ooh. You refer, you know, poetry, haiku, it was quick. You read it, and I was, that's dope. But you actually had to like it. You actually had to get the papers and really go out there and like it. But that's the first form of quick, short form media.
I love that.
And so, people always say, and I'm kind of one of them, you know, especially in football, you know, when I coach, I'm like, you know what, kid these days? They don't do this, or they don't take it this way, but it's just changes in the form. Mm-hmm. Like, we do the same thing. It's just the form in which we do it changes. And poetry is social media. That's why kids are so good at tweeting. Kids are so good at coming up with captions and coming up with these quick stories, whether visually or audibly. You come up with it so quick. And AI is not for kids. It's for adults who don't know how to do that. It's like, tell me how to write a synopsis. It's not for the kids. It's for us. But it's bravery in what they do. And it's good, like you said, it's that short form where people can really connect to it quickly. Because we've always had short attention spans. We just say it more now because we have a platform to say it. We're always like, okay, tell me this quick because I got to keep going. And that's the first form of short form. Mm-hmm. Is here's your haiku. Here's your quick poem. Here's your prose. Boom. Here's your story. Read it and go home. You don't got to read Moby Dick. You don't have to do that, you know. So that is amazing, that space that you've opened up and what you do with kids. And I guess my other question is, what's the biggest difference from beginning to end with youth who are involved in your program? Because, you know, we spoke before we started recording. When I'm teaching podcasting, the kids, the first thing they do is they're giggling and so excited or nervous because it's the first time they've ever heard their voice. You know, the first time they've ever heard that. And then you have to go through I don't like my voice. And you have to go through those stages. So what are the stages that you've seen, that you've noticed, that kids go through when they enter this program? Like, Where do they start off at? Where do they end up at in the middle? Is there a wall they have to go through? Can you describe that and how that is for some of the youth that you've worked with?
There was a poet in Lincoln who is in one of my favorite poems in the history of the program and spent, what was it, 2 years? Loved poems, just wanted to be the team manager. Sat in the back, wrote poems, listened, didn't say anything. Year three stood up and was like, I think I have something. And we're like, cool, cool, cool. And it was breathtaking, breathtaking. And then went on to script it to be a duet with another poet. And at the time, I think you were the coach. Mm-hmm. And someone asked me to come down and see this cool poem. And I walk in the room and I'm like, weren't you, you talk now? Like the process of getting somebody from just, I'm just going to sit here and write poems because I like poems and you're other word nerds, we're going to bond, to maybe this is something that I can share. To not only can I share it, I can let someone else's voice into this piece and we can have a conversation. To performing it on stage and getting ovations for it. Like, that's the path of kind of our more shy kids. They just think they, like, I love poems, but I'm not talking out loud. And then all of a sudden, they make this turn halfway through where they spent so long thinking about it and watching what other people are doing and kind of absorbing the process that they step on stage and they do miraculous things. Mm-hmm. That maybe they didn't think they could do, but they knew that they could possibly do them, and they learned that from just being in the program week after week.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot about the body, and I think as writers, we can neglect our bodies completely. Mm. Writing is this mental act. It requires sort of an internal stamina. But I think about the ways that our students learn to take up space, like literally take up space. Whether that's at the front of a classroom, if a student comes up and they're going to share their poem out loud for the first time and they're shaking and they've got their back, you know, sort of propped up against a wall because they don't want to come forward and really share their piece, or they physically hold a piece of paper kind of over their face. And so you're like, all right, your voice is so beautiful and wonderful and we'd love to hear it. Just come out from behind the paper, right? If you could just lower it down a little bit, and then teaching them just sort of how to navigate their body in space feels so important in terms of skill building and just getting students comfortable with their physical bodies in the world, whether that's, again, in a boardroom, in a classroom, wherever, to then get them on stage without paper and to have them have physical choreographed movements where they are practicing the true art of what this is, which to me is about, yes, of course, the written word, and also how are you using your body to convey the story as well. So it's those two pieces. It's not just performance and it's not just poetry. It's performance poetry. It's spoken word. How are we using our bodies to tell a better story? And I think about the gendered component of that a lot. A parallel for me is that I'm a recreational powerlifter. And so thinking about how I have been taught for years and years and years to be small and to be thin and to not take up space, to then get into a space where I can be told it's actually better to take up more space. You deserve to have access to these weights. You deserve to have access to a strength room, right? We're doing that work with students, whoever they are, however they got there, right? And saying you deserve to be under a spotlight. You deserve to have 3 minutes where nobody else is speaking. You deserve to be heard on the microphone. You deserve to be on this stage. That sense of worthiness and worth, I think, is unmatched when you watch a student go from, I'm just coming into this classroom to see what it's all about. Maybe it's going to be a fun club, to I am empowered and feeling ready to take on the world and to tell my story. That growth is consistent. Mm-hmm. We see it across school districts. We see it across cities. We see it across an urban and rural divide. I mean, it's there. It's our most consistent data.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I wish if you could, we could just meld. Here's my little comment on like education systems. If more classes, programs like this are available for kids, along with sports, right? Mm-hmm. And the correlation can be made between both, you probably would see a better, a more prepared kid coming out of school. Mm-hmm. Because something you said, which I hadn't even thought about, is the way you understand your own body and how long it takes you to do that and to be okay. Like you said, you have a paper in front of your face, or you wear clothes to hide how you really look, or, you know, like you're never really fully comfortable. Like mirrors scare people for a lot of reasons, like mentally, physically, everything. Mirrors scare people. And an unofficial mirror is a crowd. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to stand up in front of that mirror, a mirror of your peers, and see their reactions based off of what you're saying, and but also stand tall in that space and stand big and stand wide and chest up, head up, and say, whatever you reflect back to me doesn't mean that that's me in that point. And I'm still going to stand and be me. And I'm going to own this because I'm going to defend it. But yeah, you know, if by being big in their space and by being proud of what they're doing, they're defending your space. And if you can defend your space, you own your space. Mm-hmm. And if you own your space, you go on to be able to make bigger spaces for yourself as you go along. And so I really understand that growth, and I appreciate that growth, and I appreciate how you do that for the kids. And also, it has to be a good environment, because it can't just be a toxic situation and kids are still growing. So you guys are creating a really positive environment that promotes that growth. Like you said, across all divides, across all areas, you're seeing that consistent growth. And like, you know, like Sadiqa said, you're nationally recognized for how you implemented it and how you guys continue to implement that program. So I'm going to keep saying that. Just in case you don't say that anywhere, I'm going to keep saying that, because that's a big deal. Because I really want the hope to impress that you two are a big deal. And what you're doing is not just, oh, it's a nonprofit and it's a program. Oh, it's part of the arts. No, it's a big deal. Because our kids need to be able to break out of cycles that that parents have put on. And this is a good space and a safe space and an open space for kids to do that. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal. So don't forget that. So if I keep repeating myself, it's a very big deal. So all of my, like, you know, 22 listeners. No, I always make that joke, but, you know, the people that listen, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to be here, and it's a big deal to take on that transformation and say, I am going to unofficially either be or create that cocoon for kids and have a bunch of little butterflies come out. So
well, we'll just cry all the way home.
It's going to be great. It's going to be real messy.
Like Friday, he will cry in a car.
It's a long weekend for a reason. It's okay.
My other question, or my other, I don't know, just softball proposal is, if you guys can tell me, I know you told a story about the young man who sat in the back and then decided, I'm going to say something after 3 years, but do you have any other stories that over the years of that you've done this that just really stick out? And either if it was a surprise, or did they have a career trajectory that you weren't expecting? Can you guys share some stories about some of the youth that have gone through your group that have impacted you just as much as the program has impacted them?
You want me to start?
Yes.
I can think about, so I was a student in the program. We'll start there. So a decade ago, I was a kid on a stage being taught to take up space and figuring out that what I had to say mattered. And I was absolutely trying to break generational trauma and generational history in my family of a lot of shame, particularly around mental health and mental illness, and trying to figure out what it would mean to claim my story. I came from an all-girls Catholic high school. I had no business meeting someone who became a dear friend and is still a dear friend, Charlie Curtis Beard. We'll give him a shout out. He's a Los Angeles-based musician. He just opened for Flo Rida a couple weeks ago, so he is doing his thing. But he came out of this program too. He was a poet first, and he's been a musician the whole time. You can see the musical influences in his work, We were peers. We competed against each other. We lived in two different cities. Neither of us had transportation or maybe even driver's licenses to get to each other. There is no reason that we should have become friends. We came from totally different backgrounds, totally different experiences. Charlie was at a public school. I was at a private school. We connected on poetry. We connected on a shared love of humor. We connected through other kids who became our friends and pushed us closer to each other. And we've maintained that friendship. So whenever Charlie's in Nebraska, hey, Gina, what are you doing? He'll call me and we'll just have a phone conversation and make sure we're catching up. And we know about each other's partners and we know about each other's silliness and joys and also some of the hard stuff too. And we get to have conversations about what it means to be a good friend. We get to have conversations about what it means to be an artist and how we're making it in our very unique places now. I have no context for what it means to be a Los Angeles-based rapper and musician, but I know what it means to be an artist in Nebraska. And so being able to have those conversations across the table, I think, has been so impactful. And it's a relationship that spans a decade. I mean, that's rare, I think, in life. But especially out of this program, we do have those stories. And so I think about Charlie a lot. And I think about what we're doing for young people when we get them all into a single shared room at the festival. They're working all year long at their own schools. And of course, even then, they're meeting kids that they wouldn't normally have a chance to meet. But when we get them from Ogallala, somebody from Ogallala is meeting a kid from Omaha South High School, that is so impactful. There is, again, no reason necessarily that this Omaha South kid would be driving out to Ogallala to meet anybody. And so to really sort of, I don't know, my brain works like this, where I think about it as planetary orbits. You're putting planets into orbit with each other that maybe wouldn't have been. And it is this incredible solar system of kids. And you see those relationships form and maintain over years. And it's so beautiful to witness.
So my favorite story is yours.
Mm.
I met Gina when she was 17, and I was older than that. So, because she was a student and I was a coach when this program first launched. The idea that she is still here giving perspective for what it's like to be in those classrooms. I know it from a teacher's perspective, but I don't know it from a student's perspective. The fact that she carried what she learned in that space and implements it in the ways that we've built our classrooms now and is here trying to make sure that at least another generation of kids get access to this program is a huge deal for me. The best thing about the Nebraska Writers Collective is its stickiness. We build these connections that she's talking about, and people just keep coming back. Mm-hmm. Our kids become our teaching artists. Our kids become our core teaching artists. Our kids eventually, hopefully, will be the parents of kids in our program. Our kids are our co-executive directors at guiding the path of the organization. So knowing that we have done just enough right to keep you in our orbit means that we have done good work as a program and as an organization, and it makes me really lucky because I get to think about things differently because there's nothing in this organization that she can't or has not done. So you are my favorite story.
I've never thought about a poet having a kid and then wanting to send them mm-hmm. through our programs. Like,
we're coming up on the impossible.
The legacy on that.
It's getting dusty in here.
I know.
Just a little bit.
So thank you for that. And thank you for, putting me in frame a little bit with like what that cycle is like and what it means to have been in those spaces and what it means to, it's person first. It's for me, like, poetry's great. The end, you know, but poetry's not enough. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always been person first. And so to think about those relationships and the longevity, and thank you for saying that.
Thank you for allowing me to hear that and kind of have a sneak peek into your guys' relationship. If I can add, you know how everyone talks about, we want to expand people's worlds and make worlds bigger. But what you were talking about, Gina, about putting planets in orbit with each other, and having a kid from Omaha South with a kid from Ogallala, you're making people's worlds smaller, but in a good way. Because mm-hmm. every time something good happens, it's like, oh, small world. I know someone from mm-hmm. nowhere. Because it can be. And it can be in a good way. And we're making it smaller because you're making connections. And you're connecting threads throughout Nebraska and throughout what we hope or what you guys hope will become nationally. And it takes good people to do that. And you both are amazing people. And it takes a lot. You know, it takes a lot to do this, to give of yourselves. And every time, I'm sure you have a class, there's a piece of yourself in that class. That's always with that class. There's a piece of yourself always with this student. There's a piece of yourself always with that work. And that's, I think, a true connection. It's because no matter where that person goes, no matter where that work goes, no matter how many years pass, you will always be connected, and they will always be connected to you. And look at you two. It started off as student teacher, and now you guys are co-executive directors together, changing and connecting other people's lives. So I feel pretty privileged to kind of hang out and get a little sneak peek into that. So I very much appreciate that. I want to add, because I want to be respectful of your time, because I know they drove all the way out from Omaha, guys. So if you know Nebraska, it's a long drive. It's not a lot on that drive either.
It's beautiful.
It's just each other. And if you have good people in the car, it's great. Okay. If you've got good people in the car, 4 hours doesn't fully, maybe it's like 3.5. It doesn't seem like a full 4 hours, but if you don't, it's a long drive. So I want to be respectful of time. I want to ask you, and this is kind of what I ask everybody who comes on the show, and you take some time to think about it. If you need me to fill dead space to say, hey, Chris, can you talk a little bit? If you guys had a time machine, right? If you had access to it, time machine, time travel was good. We're all good. It's not a big deal. If you had access to a time machine, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, this is your chance to go back and do something. But you had to do it for yourself. So what age would you go back in time to go talk to yourself? And what would you tell them?
All right, this might be me asking you to talk for a minute.
Okay.
You got yours?
I got it.
You got yours?
I knew.
Okay.
Okay.
I wrote this poem a while ago, and I haven't gone back to it, but this makes me want to return to it. And in the poem, I am an adult, and I open, this is the power of poetry. Poetry is also a time machine. I open the door to my childhood bedroom and I watch myself flipping through like a J14 magazine and circling like Joe Jonas's favorite color, you know, quizzes that tell you, you know, who are you going to match with for your celebrity based on like, yeah, your favorite food. And it's like, my mom's pasta is not a choice on this quiz. Like, how will Nick Jonas ever love me? And I just remember feeling so ugly. I hated my curly hair. I felt like I didn't belong in my body. I felt totally out of place. And I wish I could go back and give myself a curly hair routine. Tell myself, stop brushing your curls. Stop trying to make yourself have straight hair or fit in any kind of like classic Barbie fashion. I wish I could tell myself that it doesn't really matter which boy will or will not love you. The whole point is that you love yourself and you're interested in yourself. And actually, boys might not even be the problem for you in your life. You might have a partner who's not a boy and things might be okay. And knowing the power of that and being able to tell myself that it is myself first and the world second, I think is so important. Get yourself a curly hair routine. Try to love yourself a little bit more every single day. And stop sweating over the Jonas Brothers. Things I would tell myself.
There becomes a point, especially with the way that I was encouraged through the educational process, was great. I love you like poems. Also, go to college, get a degree, and go find yourself a corporate job. And I did that. And oftentimes I did that at the expense of knowing in my spirit and in what I needed to thrive was to be doing this, was to be writing poems, was to be focusing on the ways that I can communicate and make art in the world. If I could go back to me first year of college when I was like, I'm going to be a doctor because they told me I needed to be a doctor, and change that to my poems are valid. Being the carrier of the stories of my generation makes sense. And is important. And if I meet the other carriers of the stories for our generation, that there's going to be power in that. And being able to focus on what I could create without the limits of other people's opinions, I would tell myself to focus on art and to let that be it. And your path will be different. But what you create on the other end of that will be so much greater because you trust the path and what you're doing and who you are.
That's a question I think about a lot, because I think about what would I do? You know, how would I change the trajectory? And, you know, the strong answer is I wouldn't change anything. Because every experience matters, and every experience got me to who I am. I would change some things. I would change some things and do some things differently. But I appreciate you guys sharing those moments, because those are hard. Because that's you saying, I wish I could do something different. And that's not always easy to tell people. Sometimes we leave this earth with those secrets. So I appreciate you sharing. I've learned to share mine. I'm going to share mine too, just because I don't want to feel like you're in that space being vulnerable and I'm here just listening like, hey, good job. I want to that this is all of us in this space. And I would go back, I'm going to probably say, maybe when I was like 10 or 11 years old. And I would go back, and actually, no, it's a little older than that. It's 15. Hmm. So right when I was entering high school, right? And I would tell myself no secret CDs. And what that means is I had secret CDs, like music that I hid from people, because that wasn't what everybody else in my friendship group was listening to. Like, I love Lenny Kravitz, right? And so Lenny Kravitz's album 5, that was coming out. And I hid it. Like, I took the case out, took the cover out of it. Like, and I mentioned this before with another guest, because we were like, oh, you had a secret CD too? Yeah. And I took the cover out, so nobody knew what the cover is. I put it in just like a regular green CD case, you know? So nobody, like, scratched up, so people wouldn't even know what it was. So when I was listening to it, or I had it in my bag, no one knew what it was. And I would tell myself no secret CDs, because then I think that started a road off of, no one's going to like what you like, so you got to keep it to yourself. And I think I never fully experienced the joy of liking things, the joy of being an anime head, the joy of liking rock, the joy of liking a certain genre of movie, the joy. I never really got to fully revel in that joy, because I was always like, no one's going to like it. They're going to think you're weird. So just shut up about it. So I would go back and tell myself that. So that would be me trying to change that part.
Well, those threads are all about shame, right? Shame for how I looked and who I loved. Shame for your career. What if I don't please people, right? And shame for what brings me joy. What if I don't fit in?
Yeah.
What if they don't like me? What if I get made fun of? And I think so much of this work that you are doing with this podcast is about breaking through that shame and getting people to be vulnerable and to be open and get brave, whether or not we're ready for it, and to really start to get a better understanding of whoever comes to this table. We all have these stories of shame, but there's so much beauty in breaking through them and being able to share them with each other. There's healing here.
Definitely. And it's healing in doing something you love. Because then it makes it easy. I mean, you still work. You know the saying, oh, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. You do work.
We work.
You work. But you don't mind the work. Mm-hmm. Like, coming in every day. It's still hard, but you're like, I kind of like it. You get going. Yeah. You're like, oh, man, this is good. This is good. I'm in my element. And you love what you do. And that love permeates until it comes through what you talk about. It comes through how you talk about. It comes through and exudes just in you guys' aura being here. Because I could feel that love for what you do when you got here. And the relationship you guys have with each other. So continue to be wild ones. Continue to work in love daily. Continue to share that passion so others can find a way to turn it into a profession. Whether or not that's a volunteer profession and they're helping kids, whatever it is, find a way to help them channel that passion. And keep doing that, and keep doing what you are doing, and don't change, don't stop, you know, keep it always moving forward and inviting people who really want to be involved to help you out. So keep doing that. And I know everyone needs help to do that. And so this is the time where you shamelessly plug how people can help you. So how can people help? How can people be involved in the Nebraska Writers Collective? How How can their kids be involved in the program? Please let them know all about how they can be in contact with either the two of you, or how can they just be in contact with the program?
So if you're listening and you are an educator or work in a school space or a community site where you're connected with kids who you think would resonate with this message, our website is anywriters.org. If you send an email to that through that via that website, it comes directly to our box. There are no levels. It is us on the other end. Let us know. Let us figure out a way that we can maybe work together and kind of bring this magic to kids that are in your space. If you are someone who's interested in patronizing the arts, same message. Anywriters.org also has an opportunity to click the donate button.
If you are a writer, not just a poet, but if you're a fiction writer, or you like memoir, or you're a science fiction writer, or you're a comedian, we want you to be a teaching artist. So reach out at the website. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram at NE Writers. We would love to have you apply to be a teaching artist through the website. You can always reach out via email. And if you are a student at a school that does not have a poetry program, you have the power to start a team if you want. So it's not just educators, which I love. I was a student who came through the programs and was the one who started things at my school and said, I just really love poetry. How do I get this going? You need an adult at your school and you need three buddies to make a team. And then send us an email. Let us know you want us to come to your school. We'll send you a teaching artist virtually or in person. Especially folks who are wanting to be teaching artists and wanting to start schools with our programming that are outside of the Omaha and Lincoln areas. Kearney, please call us. Scottsbluff. We've talked about Gehring. We've talked about Chadron. Lexington, please call us. We want to start programs out here.
And also, if you're interested in being published, we annually put out work from our youth writers. And so there's opportunity for you to be not just a published artist, which I think is important, but a paid one. As kids go through our program, we pay them for their work and their art and their time. So as you're looking through all of our information, know that that's a path that is perfect for you if should you choose it. And that is something that's available.
So you heard that here. Be involved. And there is an easy way to do it. There's no level. The emails goes right to these two lovely ladies. They will answer it. They will help you out. They will get you set up. So kids, you have a way to go do something. So teachers, you have a way to expand your repertoire on what to teach, to get kids engaged and have them or see that change or find that change that you're desperately wanting to make, because you're an educator and you always want to make change. So there is a place for you. So contact Nebraska Writers. If you're in Omaha, if you're in Lincoln, if you're in Lexington right here, if you're in Gehring, Scottsbluff, whatever it is, if you are listening and this appeals to you, make that contact, because I'm pretty sure that is going to be life-changing and help you make more fruitful connections as you go along. And so for Gina and Zadika and myself, again, thank you for being wild ones. Thank you for agreeing to come all the way down to Lexington and making that drive. Thank you for appearing in our studio and having this conversation with me and with the listeners out there, and being vulnerable and sharing your story. So as always, for the wild ones, we thank you for working in Loved In, and we thank you for sharing your story.